welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another great show dealing with applied metaphysical principles, if you can imagine, but also politics, for sure, tonight, because these principles are going to be, as they apply for immigration issues and problems, more than just issues, and a much a wider concept of what would be the balanced and best outcome for the present, we'll say, problems that we are having with not only illegal immigration, but politics entering into the question of how to deal with this area of life. And the real question I have is, should this be a political issue? And then some other factors to get involved. But again, we're going to be using metaphysical principles tonight to try to examine what would be, in a metaphysics point of view, the best outcome. And then we'll also talk about some spiritual ideas. I didn't want to say spiritual principles because too many people associate that with, of course, religion, and then without question it should be about the Creator and God, because spirit is the thought of God, in at least ageless wisdom in it. And so for that reason, I didn't want to confuse people into thinking that we're only going to be talking about this from some kind of narrow, proprietary spiritual belief system, which is not tonight's show. Hopefully it won't be. At any rate, as I usually attempt, which is what I'm doing right now, I would like to define what the show is going to be about in terms of what I mean. And by metaphysical, I mean using principles that apply throughout the universe as understood in ageless wisdom. And this includes that there are ultimately seven dimensions of time and space, with seven types of energy in some of those dimensions in time and space, and beyond that, seven expressions of activity in all the dimensions of time and space, as well as spirit in most of the dimensions of time and space, and beyond spirit, a godliness everywhere. So it's a critical point to start with the concept that if we're going to start applying these huge, huge thoughts and ideas to something that is a relatively relatively narrow subject. I mean, there's nothing small to me about people who have issues about immigration, one side, the other, or whatever. There's probably 20 sides to this subject. That it is a big issue to anyone, but it isn't the largest issue by far. But there are bigger issues, and in tonight's show, I want to deal with the question of the appropriateness of using anything of this nature in a political way, whether to garner support for one's, you know, life in politics versus to make points in terms of one's belief system, politically speaking, against those one thinks is not to their liking. Because all of these things have meanings that may be dark, even approaching, if not evil, in terms of the application. And this is the problem that I think I would like to address tonight, because it seems to me that there is a common element to the subject that almost everybody could agree on. And so here's a couple of the common things that I'm going to suggest. First of all, anyone who seeks to be a citizen of the United States or some other country, and does so with the effort of illegally entering and then maintaining some kind of lifestyle within the country for any protracted period of time, not just a forage into and then a quick forage out. But we're talking about living for a long time, if not a lifetime. Then such a person has, within their general belief structure, a desire to live in the country they're seeking to live in. In this case, the United States is especially true, but not necessarily only here. With some degree of threat to themselves, some degree of effort, and sometimes some great cost. And this in itself, while not mitigating any criminal activities, because it is in most cases illegal, to enter and reside in a country that you haven't applied to do so, and et cetera. Regardless of that factor, there's something in the nature of the person doing it that finds such activity as a benefit, as something that they desire enough to risk certain factors, and he has some merit to their belief structure that where they're going to is better than where they're coming from. Now, that does not change the illegality, because someone could say, well, yeah, your house is a lot better house than mine, so I'm going to break in and live there. Thanks very much. Or your things are a lot nicer than my things, so I'm going to take them. Those kinds of examples, while trying to be somewhat similar, are not true examples, because in most cases, the crime of just residing for people who are immigrating illegally, it does not involve directly interference with individual liberties or rights. It's a collective problem that if you have a lot of people that illegally enter and reside, they start to interfere with the rights of the people who are legally living in the country. And that's what tonight's show is going to be talking about. So it's very important to realize here the differences between the individual issues versus the collective issues of what a country is about. And I'm going to try to define this throughout the show and to make it make some sense, hopefully, to those of you who have a partiality one way or another, or are really interested in thinking about this subject from a different viewpoint. Now, you might say, was this show spurred by the President of the United States today, by fiat, choosing to ignore Congress and to enact his own law, which is kind of a strange thing, because it's the move of a dictator and not that of a president. That's a totally additional issue. I was thinking about the show actually before I found out about that. But nonetheless, it certainly adds to the subject tonight, and so I'm going to get into that as well. I think, though, I want to, again, this is a show about helping people to think deeper and more about everything dealing with their lives and the lives of everything around them, and to bring them to a better conclusion of why life is. And so it is an important element to consider that there may be political agendas, some of which are breaking laws themselves, to supposedly achieve, quote-unquote, some fairness doctrine or some literally socialistic or even communistic thought process. The most important thing to remember here is that a person who is an illegal immigrant is a person first, and has only broken the law on a collective basis in most circumstances. And therefore, they have maybe a special need, and we have a special, obligation to look at their crime from a standpoint as an individual versus society than as an individual versus an individual. Individual crimes versus society should not have the same level of, recrimination, punishment, or deference towards some kind of harsh treatment that crimes against more individuals against individuals have, because society can handle the impact of an individual versus the collective versus the opposite. So one individual is doing a relatively small amount of harm, but collectively a lot, like 11, 12 million, are doing a lot more harm. But regardless, you don't treat the individual in such a way. And this is somewhat the argument of people who live in sanctuary cities and, fight against the model of we should deport all illegal immigrants or possibly jail them, I don't know, or do something else that would be, punitive. My suggestion tonight has no punitive outcomes. I'm going to suggest things tonight that corrects the problem without creating new problems, I hope. It has no punitive outcomes for those who choose to participate in it, and leads to a more spiritual and societally, helpful development with a stronger country and stronger citizens on all sides. These are the things I'm trying to promote in some of my metaphysical principles as they apply to this area of thought. Hopefully you'll agree, at least, that my attempts are in that direction. If you disagree that I'm being in some way ignorant or unsuccessful, I'm open to hearing about that. This is not an edict on my part, for sure, because what I say is not going to become law. But I'm going to tell you that if we don't do something about this, there is a sort of evolutionary kind of problem to the whole situation, which may be much more destructive to our society than even the folks living here that are illegally doing so. So we need to be considering that there are options, and that the options have real, positive, developmentally speaking, solutions. And they don't have to be in some way something hostile, punitive, or unfeeling, unloving, uncaring. I do want to make this point. I don't believe that welfare in general, or giving to people in some kind of randomized segments of society based upon need only of personal nature, is a good way to develop any kind of society with people who are good citizens. As a matter of fact, it does it reverse, because it teaches people to be both irresponsible, lazy, and in some other cases, even terrible citizens. So we, and possibly to lie and cheat to become such a person in such a category. These are the things that we want to avoid, particularly in dealing with people who are in the class of illegal immigrants. And when I say illegal, I'm talking about it purely in the sense by statute, not by describing it in a derogatory way. So someone isn't illegal as a person, they're illegal in their actions towards the collective unit we call the United States. That's what I'm referring to. Okay, so now we have pretty good definitions. Let me go into some of the ideas that might be interesting to consider. The first is that in terms of the present political spectrum, the presidency and some important seats in Congress, both the House and more so the Senate, are going to be determined by the feelings of some people who are minorities. Mostly the minorities that are going to have the greatest control of the outcome are people of Hispanic origin who have, they may be from various parts, not just Mexico, by the way, by any stretch, various parts of Central and South America, the Caribbean, and Cubans, which is part of the Caribbean. And that's a large segment. They are Spanish, partly because of their language, sometimes because of the countries that they come from. And oddly, Hispanic folks are not necessarily, they may come from a country where even Spanish is not the main language. Maybe Portuguese is, or maybe even English. The point is they're coming here, in most cases, because they're seeking, and they may not believe this, greater freedom. So this is about a thing called first-ray energy. That's what I'm first discussing here in terms of metaphysical principles. Now, not every person coming is seeking that particular outcome. They may be dealing with the third or seventh ray, which is more monetary stuff. But yeah, a lot of times, it really is, and you know, we may not understand this if we're Americans, or if you're from another country where you mostly have freedom. But some people leave their existing countries because they want to be more free. And odd as it may seem, it's entirely possible that these folks come here as contrary and logical as it sounds, illegally instead of legally, and I'm going to discuss this within this context. But they come here because they are so unfree from where they are that their freedom here is imperative. Now, I want to discuss this because this is an important point that is not brought up very often. As a matter of fact, if you listen to all of the arguments about this, it's almost never brought up, which is scary because this is a big deal. And one of the things that proves my point is that we have, as a country, decided to segregate this right to seek freedom to mostly people who come that are Hispanic speaking and share Hispanic culture from Cuba. If a Cuban comes to the United States and illegally enters the country, there's a high likelihood, depending upon their background and certain other things, that they will be able to stay automatically because of laws that were passed in the 60s. This is odd. Because if you think about it, we've turned away Haitians like crazy. They don't live very far apart from each other in the Caribbean, and they're coming for, in some cases, the same exact reasons. But their country hasn't been deemed to be a completely communist country, and it hasn't been deemed to have a government which we don't like. Although their government, in most cases, is barely existent. They come from a more anarchical background. But some of them may be coming here to truly be free. And so we aren't being, we'll say, even-handed. Now, there's an argument here that the reason we did this with Cuba is because the Cuban government is plain and simple a dictatorial state that is seeking a tyranny over its citizens, and the head of that state was before Fidel Castro, now it's his brother and everything else, but it's still in the family, you know. And the point is that this you, it's kind of important to recognize right now, because the president of our country, of the United States, for those of you who live, as I do it here, and if you're not here, by the way, you can apply this to whatever country you're listening from. I know people are listening like from like over 100 countries that I'm speaking from right now. So here's the thing. This is the oddity, and this is the very strangest thing. Today, the president of the United States suggested or strongly said that he was going to make his own law about immigration because Congress hasn't, and he decided that he will. Now, he's using something called executive order. The problem is executive orders have to be based upon existing law. You can't make a new law with an executive order. And he can't do something contrary to the existing law. And he's doing both with what he came up with as a suggested plan, which by next month will become law itself, by his fiat. And the problem with this is he's doing so, therefore, as a tyrant and a dictator. Now, the problem is you can't correct these problems of freedom by taking freedom away from the majority to supposedly help the minority. Let me say that one more time. Let's say you're president of any country. You've got... Let's say you have 100 million people that you decide need, you have 100 million people that have enacted laws through their representatives that presently you don't care for about immigration. But there's 500,000 people that you want to help out because they've entered your country illegally. So, John, what are you going to do? You're going to say all those who are 30 and younger can now work in the country and are considered no longer illegal and may even vote for you if you can get it through in the next election, state by state, if you can get states to accept this in some fashion. The weird thing about this is, think about this, 100 million people are losing freedom by attempting to give freedom to 500,000 in metaphysical principles. That's like upside down, and it only comes from something like the fiat of a dictator, because it couldn't happen if it came from the votes and rights of the majority of people or greater. So this is the problem. When you get to this first-rate issue, you have to look at how much does it make people free versus how much does it remove the rights of people in general. And if it's removing by 100 to, or 200 to 1, the ratio, which is what it is in the United States right now, about 200 to 1, it's massively dark. A 200 to 1 ratio on freedom against freedom is definitely in the league with freedom. Now, why do I say that? Well, because metaphysically speaking, when you consider what it takes to create evil, it takes much less than those proportions of removing freedom from people to produce an evil society. Actually, you only need something about in the order of 5 to 10 times the reduction in freedom to end up with an evil country. We're at the 200 mark. So this is a huge step in the direction. It means that, in metaphysical terms, you do all the consequences, all, as some people would call it, the unforeseen consequences of this sort of a behavior on the part of a president. It becomes real scary. Now, Obama has done a lot of stuff like this, not just in this one area. He's had done fiats on almost every department in government. He's ignored so many laws, it's scary. In every way. And if you don't know about that, there's a great book out, came out a week or two ago, called The Great Destroyer by a guy named David, yes, and here it comes, Limbaugh, who is Rush Limbaugh's brother. But David is an attorney. Now, he's not on the radio, as far as I know. But at any rate, it doesn't matter who wrote the book. It's very factual because he gives all the references, so you can look them up on everything. And it's scary to read. If you really want to get to the bottom of what's going on, I recommend that book very strongly. It's a really good book. Again, The Great Destroyer. It's about, of course, Barack Obama. Now, getting back to the question here about these applied metaphysical principles, okay, so one thing we never want to do is remove the freedom of most to give some freedom to a few. When you do that, and there may be some reason sometimes when you need to do that, because the rights of the minority always have to be respected to some level. But when you do it in a massive way against one side versus the other, and it's not even necessary because we have methods that can work to change this, the results are sometimes extremely dark. Okay. And one needs only to look at Nazi Germany and the progression of events from 1933 till 1936 or 7. And within a 4-year period, you can see how quickly you can go from what is at least mostly a democracy to an entire extreme level of tyrannical dictatorship. We're not going that fast, but we're going about a quarter to half that speed, maybe a third of that speed. So it's scary, and it needs to stop. So the first-rate principle is, if someone really wants to come here because they want to be free, we should pay attention to that and value it. It doesn't mean they have a right to come here illegally, but it certainly has some question we have to apply to how that problem is resolved. There are parts of the immigration law presently that says if someone is coming here and wants to be free and their life is in jeopardy if they don't come here, they get special attention. You should know that. But unfortunately, most people who want to come here and want to be more free, their very life is not immediately in any sense in jeopardy, unless you consider that they can't do who and what they are, and that could be an argument, but it isn't the same as their physical life being in jeopardy, which is what the law means. That's the intention of our law. Now, what else then applies in this first-rate physical environment? Well, it also has to do with creativity. Part of the first right is freedom, there's no question about it. But it's also creativity. And some people want to come here because in the areas that they wish to operate in life and be creative, the country that they're presently in provides little or no opportunity for that. And that gets close to the question of slavery. Because even though a person supposedly is free in some ways, if they're not free to create as they choose, provided that method of choice is not destructive to others, then they are enslaved in some fashion. And so to not, we'll say, be a proponent of slavery, we need to be concerned about creative folks. And when people want to come here and they have good ideas to create, and they can show that they not only have the ideas, but they have the will and means and ability to foster their creations into a greater part of our civilization, our society. That should be of great importance to us, too. And even though they came here illegally, we need to look at that as being part of our means of mitigating the illegal immigration without punitive means. So those are issues that I think are worthwhile to determine, and it is of great value to open our minds, if not our hearts, to this this hearing. Let me move on then to, and there's a lot more that can be covered, but we don't have the time to go into all these different things tonight. So I'm just going to touch on things and give you, and then, of course, we're definitely going to talk about solutions for these things. But right now I'm just kind of defining where the solution and why the solution is going to come up the way I see it, so that everybody can maybe follow, or most of you can follow where I'm coming from. All right, so another area that people come to the United States is for greater education, either for themselves or for their children, because the areas they're coming from, they don't find that they're going to get that at the levels and in the ways that they wish to receive education. This is a touchy area because education is a two-way street. And so when people enter the educational system, they can have we'll say, adverse effect on the ability to be educated and on the ability to allow others to become educated, because they take resources and there's a lot of other factors that become part of the equation. Here's the point. When someone does come, if they can manage to pay for their education, that's something we should be looking at. Here is a fascinating idea. Recently, I'm not going to name the school, a university decided to, this is last week, to admit illegals. They gave their reasons for doing so, and to admit illegals at one half of the fee they charge people who are regular citizens. And you might scratch your head and say, I don't quite get that one. Well, they came up with some pretty good ideas. It's a little strange. First of all, they wish to promote the idea of sanctuary, and they wish to promote the idea that illegals are people and we should treat them, and they're trying to offset all the things against illegals. So they think by providing education and give the illegals an opportunity to maybe find some means of making themselves legal just by becoming more educated. But their other idea, and that part I'm not necessarily agreeing with immediately, but their other idea is almost humorous. They said there's virtually no other schools doing this, and their enrollment is down because of the recession and their high prices. So they decided to slash their prices to the people who are most likely wanting to go to their college because they will accept them, and those folks will then provide a significant source of revenue and fill their classrooms, and they are ready, willing, and able to be educated, and somehow they're able and willing to pay at least half the tuition. And they thought that's a pretty good deal for everybody around, all both ways, and et cetera. The only problem is they're probably breaking a few dozen different kinds of laws. But regardless of that issue, as they say, you know, that's business. And it's a kind of strange idea. You almost can't completely knock it because it certainly is creative in terms of a business model. And they deliberately put that business model in there because I think that on the other grounds they may have some serious defects in their logic. But at any rate, here's the point. People who seek education, who are willing to pay for their education, and who are willing to at least meet the same criteria for admission, this is part of the problem. In other words, if there is a problem getting admitted into colleges, I don't think this particular university has this issue, but if there were, it should be to the person who is most capable of using the education in a way that benefits all of us, particularly if it's a public school. Now, private schools, there could be a difference about this. But if it's a publicly supported school, we all share in some way how that school admits people. So, at any rate, this is a very fascinating subject to me, because the second way is part of education. And as it is applied in metaphysical terms, people who are illegal aliens, maybe if they have some rights to getting educated, it isn't such a bad thing. And this makes sense in terms of President Obama's fiat. But unfortunately, the rule of law comes to be more important, and the rule of freedom for the citizens choosing to do what they want being critical, than whether or not illegals can or cannot get educated or find a job. These are the two things he's focusing on. And we'll get to the job part. But the point is, right now, in looking at education, there may be some room for creative, we'll say, lawmaking, not fiats and tyranny. And that's what tonight's show is about, is defining these creative solutions based upon this. All right. And let's move on, because, again, we don't have a huge amount of time here. The next area that I want to talk about is the application of the third way. This is the economy on a big scale. Okay, let's talk about this. Illegal aliens, what do they do? Well, most of them work as individual, independent contractors of some sort. Some of them work completely illegally for companies that don't report them or whatever. In some states, this is true. And then you've got a whole range of almost an underground economy in certain professions, be it landscape, roofing, in the construction trade. And in other areas, there's restaurant types of work, and sometimes hotel and motel service, different issues like that, housekeeping. These are the areas that they tend to find jobs in, but they aren't the only ones. What is the effect on the economy? Well, part of the effect is that the more people who work, the better. I mean, there's generally a good thing. However, the argument can be made that if illegal aliens are taking up jobs, that people who are not in that classification, and there's not enough jobs to go around, which at the present time that's kind of true, then you have a collective harm that's taking place by the individuals. And so it needs to be offset in some way. My suggestion is that the way you offset this is that you change the way that these illegal aliens are working, and you allow them to work in ways that doesn't take jobs away but adds jobs to the economy. Well, is there such a thing? Well, we will talk about that. There's some other interesting points to this, but I'm just trying to get to, you know, how we're going to come up with some non-punitive methods for solving a real touchy subject. Now, we're running out of time for this segment, and so what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break for about 2.5 minutes, and we'll come back and revisit more about these different principles, and then we'll apply some of them, or all of them, if we can, to solutions. So we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about applied metaphysical principles for immigration problems. Oh, boy. A long title for what hopefully won't even be as complicated as the title sounds. But at any rate, it is something that's certainly relative to today's subject, because on this very day, there is the suggestion, if not the application, of a new law made by one person, the President of the United States, that will affect 800,000 to a million people. Yeah. And it's going to change their status from being illegal to being something in the middle, mostly legal, though, where they can get jobs, they can go to school, et cetera. And it's anybody 30 or younger who has been here for like a year or two or whatever. Again, a lot of these things are a little iffy because they're floating this out there because they know it's just blatantly illegal, to tell you the truth. And I don't know, could lead to an impeachment. It's possible. You know, the funny thing is that it only takes the House to impeach the president. The Senate would almost certainly not convict him because it's controlled more or less by the Democrats, but they would still have to hold a trial. I don't know if Obama would do too good in a trial a month or two before his election. So you might think about that, that this is truly, we're getting into impeachable events. Why impeachment? Because if the first thing you're supposed to do is uphold the Constitution of the United States, and that Constitution says that only Congress can enact laws dealing with the subject area that the President decided he can do with an executive order, you have a constitutional crisis, and one in which it appears there's a reason to impeach someone. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen. If it was up to me, though, which it isn't, I would vote to impeach him. I would. But that's why I'm not there, I guess, is because maybe that's not the right thing to do. At any rate, going forward, what is the situation? This problem of people who are illegal immigrants, that means that their behavior is illegal. There's nothing wrong with those people. But this problem has been with us for a long time. In 1986, Ronald Reagan said, hey, we got 10 million people here that are illegal. Why don't we just make them all legal, but then say from now on we're going to close the borders, we're going to do a lot better job of deporting people who are illegal and upholding the laws of the country, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. Then his predecessor, Bush, said we're going to build a fence. And it's going to go all the way around. We're going to have military people and guards. going to stop people from coming into the country in mass. There'll still be a few to sneak through, but we're generally going to get this done. Well, he didn't do it. No, there's lots of things why he didn't do it, but he didn't do it. And then Clinton said he was going to do it. He didn't do it. Then Bush the Younger, he was going to do it. He didn't do it. And so what's happening here is we're back to where we were, but worse, before 1986. We haven't solved any of the problems about this subject. And it's almost like people are not willing to entertain any solution other than some punitive measure, which is hostile to some people that probably don't deserve any longer that kind of treatment. And maybe when they first got here, you could say, well, you know, they certainly are illegal at this moment. Yeah, but they got that's not where they are anymore. You know, you have to deal with the reality of the subject. Someone who's been here for 20 years, right, or 30, has children. Some of those children may be legal because they were born in the United States, but they may have children that are not legal because they were born outside the United States. Wow. Could you imagine a family with those kinds of problems? And it's a kind of a strange situation. And I'm saying, well, maybe we can find some solutions based on metaphysics that would allow us to apply these so we can end up with a better outcome than we presently have. Certainly the worst outcome is to have a tyrannical person telling us how to solve the problem. We don't want to hear that, because the loss of freedom is worse than the solution to the problem. Remember that. All right, so moving now, we were talking about the economy, and I had suggested that there's a lot of issues here about economic factors. My thought is that if we could come up with a way that the economy grows more, more people have jobs rather than the question of whether they're going to have fewer or no jobs, and there's a general improvement in the economic climate, including taxes and everything else, isn't that a better solution? And I've got some ideas about that. So you know, this is not mutually exclusive territory where you can't find some way to solve these issues. Yeah, we can do it. We're here. We can do it. Okay. What about the question, as some people might describe it, of the squalor or ugliness created by people who are living such an impoverished way that the beauty of communities and the destruction of the we'll say the balance of beauty with a general ability for people to live comfortably and without having, say, people trying to find jobs in every street corner in masses. There are certain things that make neighborhoods ugly, and that's one of them, isn't it? I mean, let's face it, these are real serious concerns for some people in some communities. This is the biggest problem. It's called a fourth rate problem. And it really has to do with sort of the practical side of some folks looking for work. It may be a Walmart parking lot, which now has stopped because Walmart stopped, but or possibly it's a Home Depot or some other major store place, and they haven't necessarily stopped it, but they try. And you get this kind of thing that it's these folks want to have jobs, they're looking desperately for work, and they go where the rest of us are. But when they do that and they do it in mass, it produces an ugliness. What is the ugliness? The ugliness is people desperate for work, constantly approaching people who either don't have work or don't want to hire illegals. And it's also ugly from another standpoint, that usually because they're looking for work at that moment, they're not dressed in the best attire, or maybe they don't have any better attire. And so maybe they don't look very pretty. So that's another thing a sense of fear, whether real or unreal, that groups of people who have a common purpose could become in some way hostile, violent, or maybe muggers or something like that. I find that to probably be more an irrational fear, but still, we all fear groups that we don't understand that are in some way inhibiting us by asking us for something or just being there in the physical way of us. And that can constitute a fear that is not only uncomfortable, but produces a sense of ugliness to the environment that we normally would expect to find some degree of pleasantness to. So it moves from a pleasant place to an unpleasant place, which we would call an ugly kind of environment. And again, this may be mostly the projection of the people that are walking through that environment, but it isn't irrational to believe that people have that sense. Can we stop that? And is there a better way to deal with this problem? And I say yes. Boy, there are many better ways to deal with it. But we have to deal with it from changing laws and allowing people to have more dignity in their search for both work and for help. And this is also true of people who are panhandlers. And I find that most people who are not legal, who are illegal immigrants, are not the panhandlers. That's the one, at least in my own very limited experience. But regardless, this also is obtrusive and can be so. At any rate, so these are areas that we should be definitely looking for a solution to the problem. And I'm going to tell you there are definitely solutions to this problem. And so the good news is that it doesn't have to be this way. And we can make it better. We really can. And without being punitive. Without saying, throw them in jail, deport them, take their children away, firstborn first. Yeah, I mean, crazy stuff. Things that don't make anybody proud to be an American. But all of us want to stop what seems to be almost a flood of illegal immigration, which on a collective basis is harming the United States. And that's the problem. I'm talking about the harm right now, aren't I? Let's go into the fifth ray approach. Now, a lot of people say, well, it's a fifth ray. How is that? Isn't that science? And, well, it's science. It's basically truth. And it has to do with law itself, as well as the truth in general. Science is one means of finding truth, but it isn't the whole thing of the fifth ray. The fifth ray is also the development of mentality, being able to think more mentally than and emotionally. And what is it about illegal immigration that is a problem for this particular function of energy and, let's say, God? And here is where it gets really strange. I mean, it's so unbelievably strange that we can't even keep track of what it really means. Laws that were enacted some time ago in many localities are now being broken by some communities. Some communities are breaking law, but this is more rare, by literally being aggressive in arresting more illegal aliens for anything than other people. And that's not right. They should be treated on an individual basis the same. And that's one of the arguments against the Arizona law, which is where I'm speaking from, is Arizona, where the 1070, that the court struck down certain parts of the law because it says you're not really treating the illegals as just people. You're trying to find that they are illegal or not. And if you're trying to find whether or not they're illegal, maybe that isn't. That you're not giving them the right to be human, in a sense. That's an argument. It could be. And, of course, people say, well, they don't have any rights because they're illegal. I know. This is where it gets, I'm telling you, it's like, whoa, what? okay, maybe they don't have any rights. But, you know, we have a constitution based upon the Declaration of Independence, which says that all the rights of humans do not come from the government. They come from God. Yeah, I remember that most inconvenient truth. And if that's true, then they have the right from God to be treated as human beings. So there I have to side with the folks who basically are against 1070 in some of the original ways that it was written. It's been changed now. They took that stuff out. Now we have the other side. Okay, we got the other side. That the people in favor of, you know, spreading the illegal alien message or whatever are seeking now, in their version of truth, to say that you can't ever find out if a person's illegal, no matter what's happening to them. Well, that's weird. I mean, that's like saying, well, okay, you virtually can't even ask them their name. So if you stop someone and you say, well, you just shot that person, or you just ran that stop sign and smashed into some other car, or whatever, you know, now if you're a law officer, you can't ask them where they live because you might find out that they're actually illegal here. And so this is a goofy part of the laws. And so here, again, the best thing is to look at whether the action is to find out specifically if the person is illegal, or is the action to carry out one's professional duty to do their job and to carry out the laws of the community and the state, etc. And if it's the first, then you probably are on the wrong track, but if you're in the second, which is the way 1070 is now being presented in touted, it's a pretty reasonable thing that if you're in the process of finding out that somebody has committed some other act or crime, you find out that they are an illegal alien, that's tough luck for them. And there's an answer to this. I don't want you to think there's no answer to this. You don't have to go one way or the other. There's a third or fourth or fifth way of dealing with this, because if you have non-punitive means of dealing with illegal immigration, the people can be rehabilitated from the crime without deporting them. They just have to choose the option in the box that says, I wish to become a legal alien along this part of this law that allows me to do so, but I admit that I did this crime or whatever, and I'm willing to take the punishment of that crime, provided that it isn't something so outrageous that we wouldn't ever want them living in the United States, and that could be. I mean, some crimes that people would never want to consider. And so if someone runs a stop sign or speeds a little, they don't end up getting deported, and they have an option of making themselves into a legal alien without having to lie about it. And if someone commits a murder or rapes somebody or does something else terrible, we have the right to just get rid of the person, deport them, maybe after they've served a prison sentence. And that's fine. Those are okay things to have as outcomes in these situations. The most important thing is that law needs to be law, no matter who is seeing to the fact that the law is carried out. And law needs to be obeyed by no matter who is helping to make sure that it is. This is a scary thing. We presently have the United States government, particularly the Obama administration and his attorney general, attempting to define the rights of the people to have laws carried out by members of law enforcement, and this is ridiculous. In other words, it's sort of like saying, I am the only source, we are the only source, well, it's kind of I when you talk about Obama, Holder, doing federal immigration law, and anything or anyone else who is doing so illegally and cannot carry out the will of the people in local communities or any place. Well, that's just upside down and crazy. Come on, you got to think about this in terms of just logic. It's the people that have the power to command the government, not the government who has the power to command the people. That's what's wrong with the present administration and their attitude in regards to 1070 and all the other kinds of laws throughout the United States. They've been saying this, is we are a central government of tyranny. States have no rights. The 10th, the 11th amendments are gone, goodbye, all that. Forget about that Constitution. You don't need that Constitution. That's what the president said. He said it's outdated, useless, hunk of junk. All you need is me. I'll tell you what to do. And if you don't like it, well, I'll fix you. But anyway, so this is the crazy part about this fifth-rate issue, is that it's destroying our legal system, and we need to stop it by making part of the illegal alien issue not something that is destructive to the laws of society, making society into some kind of beastly thing. The tyranny is one option and anarchy is the other. None of it makes any sense. And so we can correct all this. There are ways of solving this problem. Now, we're going to continue on with this, but I did want to mention, I'll give you your mind a little bit of a rest. Oh, my God. You know, if you happen to be running around in the Phoenix area this coming Monday, which is, that's June 18th. I'm going to be over at Barnes & Noble Tempe Marketplace from 7 to 8:15 p.m. And come visit me and others I know, and anybody can come and be involved in a metaphysical discussion. This time I'm going to have some topics to talk about. What happened the last time was the strangest thing. Some people I know who were kind of in a study group started talking about some things that were really far out there, but not central to what I think is spirituality. It's more about, you know, let's talk about really advanced subjects. And, you know, I like to talk about things that people have some serious life issues and questions about so they can get some, you know, helpful ways of solving life. The more esoteric, meaning hidden, and more, we'll say, disconnecting from people's lives, subjects, don't necessarily do that. So I'm going to be a little bit more structured in my approach this time around. Maybe I have to tell some people. We'll talk about that another time. Anyway, you can come and visit, be with us. If you want information, you can call 480-966-3132. Or if you're out of state right now, but you're still like, you're going to be here, 800-777-7850. We'll get you to the same place. And you can get more information if you want to come by, really. And so I'd love to see those of you who haven't come by visit. I would like to meet you and get to know you. And as a matter of fact, there's a fellow named David who I met last time, and I really like David. And he's a student of the Ageless Wisdom, and I find his thoughts about the subject very interesting. And I also want to mention that if you haven't tried BuyJizik, give it a try. BuyJizik.com is one place you can get it from. Or you can also, if you're in the Phoenix area, you can go get it at, let's see, where can you get it at? I'll find it. But anyway, there's a store in town you can get it at. And in either case, you need to try this product because what it does is it really reduces significantly most people's pain levels, and it does so by moving the chi energy so that it's balanced in the body. And because there's a momentum issue, the first couple times you use it, you take it a lot, and then you take less and less each time after that until you find the amount on a consistent level that you need, if it's needed consistently, or until the pain is just plain gone. When it's gone, that's good. And it's really good to consider that as a solution to some people's present pain levels. You can buy it on sale. Yeah, it's reduced in price. The big bottle is $30. Little bottle is 20. I think it's 20 or something like that. I know it's 13. Excuse me, and or 12 or something like that in that ballpark. And this is a lot less. So you can get the trial size, try it for a very minimal amount of money. Get the little bigger size for a bit more money, but still a lot less. And it's a good product to try. Now, let's come back to our show topic and deal with that. This next area we're going to cover is the aspect of metaphysical principles, but as applied along the six type of energies that are available. It's another way to sum up how the people use their chakras or senses. And in this particular case, it deals with that area that is the solar plexus center, and sometimes referred to as the devotional ray, or the ray of, for many people, of religion. Now, in this element, I think this is where we may have more, we'll say, agreement. Because many different religions have a kind of almost flexible, even desiring of service and help to people who may be illegal aliens. Not all, but a lot of them do. And what is their general attitude? Their general attitude is people first, status of immigration second or third or tenth. And so they try to be of service in various ways. Here is where the problem lies. Personal service, personal help versus soul level. This is such a, we'll say, important element to all parts of making decisions of how to give to people, that I'm going to talk about it in terms of just general giving. No matter whether you're a religion or not, no matter how you decide to give, if you're going to give to folks in general as a group, and if you're going to give to anyone specifically, try to give in ways that are wise. Now, what is a wise way of giving? Give to someone so that it helps them to become better givers to others in the same or similar ways, so that you're helping others to be givers as souls when you give to them as a soul, because you're helping them to become a better giver. Don't give to others in ways that reduces their level of giving, makes them more selfish, reduces the level of responsibility, and generally makes them terribly dependent and in many ways lacking creativity and purpose in their life, and virtually a enslaved person, because slavery comes from a lack of creative abilities to be exercised by the person. Not that they aren't innately able, but they may not be able to exercise them. And one of the ways you cut out people's exercising creativity is to welfareize them or to give to them what they could be doing for themselves but are not, which teaches them to not do for themselves. And then they don't see others as anything other than a means of giving to them instead of them giving to others themselves. So this is wise giving we need to do, either collectively through various spiritual and religious organizations or collectively in any other fashion where we're devoted to the idea of giving but only in wise ways as souls, to help others to become souls themselves and never to help them become more selfish or weaker, less creative people. And this is where religions need to be more consistent and more careful. Too many times I hear of religious organizations being, we'll say, trite in their giving in ways that helps to make people selfish. Now, that's not true if there's some kind of major disaster. Giving then is needed right down to the level of food, shelter, clothing. But when a person isn't at that need level, not in a real sense, they could do fend for themselves, but you come in and say, well, we know you're having trouble, you're not eating as much, so how about we give you all this food for a month, and maybe next month, maybe the month after that, but we know that eventually you're going to work it out, right? No, that's not good. That's not good at all. Instead, say, look it, we'll give you food for 3 days, maybe, but we need you to be helping in service. We need you to go help other people to be giving more themselves to others, pay it forward, you know what I mean, and do something that shows that you are with us, not a product of dependency that we create, making them a slave. So, unfortunately, too many religions, and sometimes other groups as well, and the government in particular, enslaves people. The government should not be involved in this at all, except in major crises such as, in its collective as a group, such as a hurricane, earthquake, that kind of stuff, floods, tornadoes. Then the government can be involved because it's a group helping groups. But when you get down to the individual level, no good. Because inevitably the government enslaves people. Why can you correct it in a church or even a bunch of churches and you can't correct it in the government? Because there's a political payoff to the people in the government to make people enslaved. It guarantees their jobs, the governmental jobs, they're getting reelected and they buy votes. Whereas churches don't do that. Usually. Some do it in really, we'll say, not very nice ways by virtually pressuring people to become members of the specific order and believing in their specific ways of thinking. That is as dark as the government doing it because they want more votes. If you really want to give to people so that they become better givers, and forget about what you're going to get out of it, because if you're going to doing it to get something, you're no better than the worst of them. And it certainly isn't wise giving. It's actually selfish giving, if you can understand what I just said. All right, so this six-rate business is really kind of important because it's being misapplied on a personal level, destroy creativity and freedom, and in some way to control people, and that's a very terrible thing, to enslave them, in effect. Right, and finally, let's talk about the seventh-way method, because I want to get to the solutions, and I can see the clock tick-tick-ticking away. Okay. The seventh-way issues are these. That's more about business, about being, we'll say, thrifty by some people's standards, or using through synthesis means of helping people to save time and energy and become extremely efficient. It also involves the concept of business, but not business on a huge scale, business more like small businesses and that sort of stuff. So Here's where this type of energy presently is being almost ignored by the present administration because they're anti-business. The reason they're anti-small business is because small businesses lead to greater levels of freedom in people because people use a lot of creativity. And then the people rebuke a government that tries to enslave them. And votes from them folks. You see. So they go out to kill small businesses, destroy them, and to enslave them so that they can't function very well, so that most successful small businesses fail. And the ones that don't turn out to be puppets of the government in certain ways, and usually through corruption. So at any rate, you end up with this a terrible system, and you want to stop it. And the best way to deal with this, if it's about illegal immigrants, is to get them involved in the process of business. And you say, well, wait a second, if they're illegal aliens, how are they going to operate a business? I'm going to give you a solution to this. Of course, that's the whole point. And it's not punitive, and it isn't going to take away their rights, it's not going to make them miserable or anything. But, you see, we haven't been facing the real issues about the solutions. We want to solve the problem by controlling people that we should have controlled in the first place by having a border policy that was probably more strict and a enforcement policy about illegal aliens in the first place. But it's too late. You can't go back, okay? Just like Reagan found out. He said, you can't go back. You got it. We're going to have to give amnesty to them all. I'm not suggesting that, because that didn't work. Don't suggest and go about the past that failed, because you're going to do it again. And that's like insanity, right? You already know it failed, so why are you going to do it again? See, it will fail again? Oh, yeah, okay. That makes sense. All right, so we'll get to this solution, hopefully by the end of the show. But it's a fascinating idea that maybe the solution is to get more people, not less, who are illegal aliens, to be business people and to employ others. But I'll tell you how I'm going to do that. Now, should the government at all be involved in helping illegal aliens become legal? There are some things the government needs to do, and this, again, goes all the way back to the first-ray issues, and I want to just cover some of these, so to speak, as I move back into the solutions now. There are the few ways I see that make some sense, which has already been suggested, is the following. If someone agrees to the following issues and becomes a member of some part of the service to the United States through what we would consider to be a government-run and not socialistic institutional type of government, where the government's not going to operate businesses or whatever, then that would make sense. The first that I can think of, and that has been suggested, is possibly some term, maybe 4 years, and I'm going to suggest 4 years in most cases, 4 years of service in the United States military at the same pay grades that other people get, but based upon higher taxation on pay. Now, why would I suggest that? Well, because part of the irresponsibility of most illegal immigrants is that they couldn't or didn't pay taxes. And if they didn't, and this can be found out whether they did or didn't pay taxes, if they didn't pay taxes, they should be taxed at a higher rate during these 4 years, maybe double, to help pay back and to make them aware of the collective harm they did to the society they live in. The requirements for military service will undoubtedly require proficient use of English. Because if you can't speak English, you become a detriment to the troops around you. And so you won't be able to enter that form of service. But you could learn English, and maybe an immersion program in English could be included in the basic training, which would have to be extended for maybe, instead of 8 weeks, to maybe 40 weeks or something, so someone can learn really good English. You can learn English in that period of time. It's not an easy language, but you certainly can learn to speak it and eventually read and write it in a reasonable period of time. And so this makes sense. This makes some level of sense. But the person also has to be fit for that service. If they're way out of shape, if they're, you know, if it doesn't make sense for them, then this option may not apply because they are going to be treated the same as anybody else who's going to enter the service. And probably they're going to have to be under like 35 or 40 years of age because they'll be too old in most cases, or certain sexual condition and other things like that. Does this make sense? Yeah, sure. They join the service with the things that I've said. They get to be, after 4 years, changed in status from an illegal alien to a legal alien. And then within a short time, they become, they're offered citizenship. But in every case, I'm going to suggest from this point forward that citizenship be more than just learning the English language, being able to speak it proficiently, learning a little bit about the Constitution, taking a test on that. But I call it the good citizenship test. I think that people should take a written and verbal and exam showing that they understand the principles of American society, describing it as it relates to them and what they might do with the rest of their life, and showing how they can demonstrate this in their own behaviors as a good citizen. I call that the citizen test. Every illegal alien should take that test, and maybe the legal ones, too. Okay, so this is a whole other part of the plan, is to try to get people who, if they're going to become citizens, they do so by paying something back in both their behaviors and money and taxes. They do so in terms of their attitudes and understanding, in terms of their education about our society and realizing how they can fit into the society as a good citizen. Make sense? Maybe. Now, this is a governmental way, so it's along the first way. And there could be something similar in terms of, like, having a program where you could be in service, as has been in years past, to the United States through forms of helping people in other countries and serving outside of a militaristic program. Similar kinds of results, similar kinds of ideas can be done. Now, this is just the first beginning option along the first way. What about people who want to be very creative and have a bunch of creative ideas? Those people can apply for a creative standing of becoming a legal immigrant by working for or with or in some institution where they apply their creative abilities with others or by themselves in ways that are very valuable for another period of 4 years, and where, again, if they didn't pay taxes, their taxes may be doubled. In those cases, the employer also will be doubled in their employment taxes for that, for hiring that person. But they're going to get somebody who has to show that they have some creative ways of being of service to the people, person, or company that they are going to be employed by. They can also, in rarer circumstances, be the company themselves. And if they can show that they've already been doing this while they've been illegal, this is going to be rare because most of them don't do this, but if they've already been doing it themselves, then they can say, well, look, I'm very creative. I have my own company. I've been doing it illegally. Now I want to do it legally. In those cases, they, as an employer, would have to pay double taxes on themselves, and they, as the employee, so to speak, because they're the owner of the company, would pay double taxes for the 4 years. They would have to do the same citizenship test, etc. What happens in both of those circumstances is they're adding to the income and economic conditions of society. They, through their creativity, and notice I'm using creativity in a way which would be defined very openly, has led to the creation of many new jobs. Again, it would depend on each area what kind of jobs would come out of it, and the expansion of technology, the expansion of we'll call it goods and services, available to all the people that they serve in some fashion. Yeah. That's just all on the first right now. Now, let's say you have someone who's seeking freedom. Not necessarily creativity, but freedom. And they say, I want to become a citizen. I'm illegal here, but I want to become a citizen. Then they must find ways of helping others to be free. Those ways may include people who have been extensively abused on welfare by just being on welfare. They may find other avenues. They may serve in other capacities, even outside of this country here, to other countries. They may do a bunch of things that helps to breed freedom. Freedom will also involve creativity. It almost always does. But the emphasis for these folks is, I'm going to help everybody to be freer. Maybe by helping improve the number of people who vote, by helping people to become, in some ways, better citizens. This is a kind of nebulous area, and it's probably going to be the most difficult area for someone to apply to, because they're going to have to come up with this themselves. But you leave it open that there are some people that just have this ability to spark freedom and to do it with others. It's a good thing. And it could be that those few may be very important to the many. Let's move on and talk about the solutions in education. Now, there's a lot more to say about each one of these subjects. I'm only touching on these tonight so that we can start having a dialogue about solutions instead of having an edict made telling us how and when and in what way we are going to be opening up illegal immigration to legality. And it's going to be done by one person. Well, yeah, maybe. Okay, so let me continue. Those who seek to be educated as a part of their process of becoming an immigrant, a legal immigrant, need to do several things. The first is they need to pay, if they go to a public institution, they need to pay back for the proportion of what that education was worth paid by public funds. That will be part of their bill, so to speak. They also need to pay back any taxes for income that they earned and didn't pay taxes on, just like all others. But the factor here now gets into education. They themselves need to become teachers of others for all the things that they learned during their 4 years that they are in this situation of education. They need to use their education as a means to educate other people. But at the same time, they themselves would show a proficiency of the use of the education that they're getting at a certain level to be determined in this part of the, we'll call it, new laws. Maybe it's a C or C-plus average, or I don't know. And there may be some measure of consciousness as well as knowledge, which is a whole other thing that I'm not going to get into tonight, but it's a big deal. And this type of approach would be for all people, not just young people. I know we think of educating the young, but we need to be more concerned that education is available to anybody if this is what they see as their life need. And the education needs to be related in some way so that it can be given as a benefit to others. It could be just being taught by them. But when they teach it, they don't get necessarily significant, they may get a small amount, but any significant amount of pay. So they're not going to get the pay of a professor. They may get some small amount. But the issue here is not getting paid so much as learning to give in ways back to others, which makes them a better citizen. It's giving in wise ways that makes us more soul-like. And souls are way better citizens than our personalities So those along the educational side of things could be students for the entire 4 years, but they're going to also be somewhat teachers. They're going to be assisting other teachers that are around them. They will be, at times, evaluated to see if the education that they supposedly are getting, they are truly becoming educated, or are they just there to sit on a chair and try to pass a test, maybe successfully or not. I don't think tests, per se, as we have understood them, is the only answer, by the way. Some of the tests need to be about the person's performance in teaching. So think about that, if you will. Let's move on, because, again, I'm looking at our time factor here. And now let's talk about a bigger area where we get into the third ray type of images. Here, again, military can be an option, but it's a little different because these are people who are going to choose the military as a career, not for 4 years of service, but more that they want to be members of it as a career or a police service or some other governmental type area again, but more on a protracted level. So these folks may even go to school. They may go to some kind of military program first and then enter the military. This is more professional. Same thing with they're in the policing element, et cetera. They can serve that way. That's their ticket. It's going to be 4 years, yes, required, but in their particular case, during those 4 years, it's going to be aimed at this is what they want to do for a longer period of time. They won't be forced to. In other words, this isn't indentured. They're not going to be there forever if that's what they don't want. But they're preparing themselves to, and they may go that way if they do. And people in general in this situation can also add to the entire, we'll call it, economic development of the country by getting involved in, we'll call it, the areas that include bigger business, finance, areas that they may choose for 4 years to serve in, choose to pay double taxes in if they haven't paid taxes in the past, and to work in a way in which they're not part of the government necessarily. But the government would be only in the rarer circumstances you choose one of those government options. But now you're choosing mostly in the private sector, but you're choosing ways of helping to serve some bigger form of business, some bigger form of institution. It could be a bank, but it may not be. That is showing that there's a desire on the part of the illegal alien to learn the ways of, we'll call it, capitalism in general, and to be able to apply it through some form of institution. Still, the option remains that before or even during the 4 years of service, the illegal alien can become the bigger business, become the greater source and the supplier of jobs to others. In all of the circumstances where someone becomes their own company or it has their own business, I suggest that the following would be true, and that is that as the their companies grow, for every three people that they provide jobs to, they have to work one less year to become a citizen. So effectively, if someone had a great idea and had a company in this system that I'm suggesting with 12 or more people that are employing illegal aliens in their business and helping those illegal aliens to develop themselves, it could be also people who have been incapacitated in their ability to find work. That's another thing. Or maybe disadvantaged folks with disabilities or some other factor. We could include a lot of different folks in this. Then they, for every three, it's a year for all. If you get 12, well, you can start planning on your citizenship, taking that citizenship test and all the whole other things, and almost immediately become a citizen. said, but maybe there would have to be at least 1 year where you show that you are employing 12 people, and I employ them for maybe 1 week, say, well, I'll become a citizen tomorrow. But you see what I'm saying here? This is truly paying it forward. It's making illegal aliens into big business people or bigger business people who add to the employment structure and bring in the people who are least likely to be able to find jobs. Wow. There's a way to deal. I like that. Yeah, so that's a third way of reapproach. I really like that one because it's the way it just spreads it all around. It's going to be connected to the seventh way when we get to that, hopefully we will, because there's a common thing. But in this case, I'm talking about someone who is doing it on a fairly large scale. So to eliminate virtually all the time it takes. So someone is really providing the jobs for 12 people. They are getting to the place where basically they are great generator of wealth to the entire society. You see that? I hope you do. Because this is really about wealth creation. This is about adding to things. This is not about taking or reducing the number of jobs. It's the exact opposite, right? All right. What else would be along the third style, the third ray style of producing? Well, another important element to the third ray is that it develops civilization in general, and it develops specific civilizations or societies. And so if someone can create a whole new segment to the production in society, this would be a combination of a first and third ray approach, then they might have the same kind of thing. Even though they may not develop as many jobs, maybe they develop a certain level of economy where they create something new that produces a lot more money in society, a lot more growth in terms of markets, etc. And maybe they don't need as many employees, but they have all other businesses now involved with them because of their marketing, whatever they're doing, etc. And if they can show that, it's the same thing. And bingo, bango, they could become very quickly, if they are such wheelers and dealers and strong creators in an economic sense, they could become citizens in that way. Now, there's a lot of corollaries to all these different ideas, and so we can come up with many different styles of making this a beneficial to everybody approach of becoming a legal person, a legal alien anyway, and getting to become a citizen. Now, in every case, the person could legalize their alien status, but it's still up to them to choose to be a citizen. Remember, citizenship still is another step in this process. You aren't automatically a citizen. You have to do the other things that I suggested, or something like that. Okay, let's continue on. In the fourth ray aspect, someone is, if their community is needing to be brought to a better standard of, we'll call it, improving the census of all those who experience things and making it a more beautiful place to live, making, providing a means for those that are still illegal to do things in ways that are not ugly. And for those who aren't illegal, but for some other disadvantage or for some other defect in them, they have been living an ugly life, those folks can then earn their citizenship by providing services that will get people to stop doing that sort of thing, and so they could become a sort of unique employment agency, providing a matchup between, as I'm just using this as an example, a matchup between those folks who have normally been looking for jobs in street corners or parking lots, and now they provide a matchup that allows them to find a more substantial type of work. It still may be daily, but at least it's more substantial. And it allows the people who are looking for help to employ these people in ways that is both legal and beautiful, or not ugly. And it allows a greater level of, we'll call it, spiritual side to be present in the way the people are served. What do I mean by that? Well, let me give you some examples. It is incumbent upon the people that go down this road to have like a contract with a community or with some private store or private agency to help make the environment more conducive to business, more conducive to the community, more helpful for everybody. And they become more like ombudsmen, and also they have to do a little bit of the educational element. They have to do a little bit of everything to make the people who they're going to be serving, which will be other illegal aliens and in some cases, but also people not necessarily in that category, more able to find work, more able to interact and to relate with the rest of the community in ways in which they're accepted as eventually to be citizens, but as legal people, and not be ostracized to live in strange areas where they can't really let anybody know who they are and what they can do. And but they will be integrating in many different ways these people into communities and allow the community to see these people as a resource now instead of as a blight and instead of as an illegal person. And so this will be their job. Now, each person that does this gains, through the number of people that they help, the 4 years of service, or which could be quantified by the people they help on both sides of the fence, the illegal people and or disadvantaged, and the people who want to use their services. And they also make sure that everybody gets a fair shake in the deal. So, as an example, an illegal doesn't go to work for somebody at $8, $9 an hour, whatever it might be, and at the end of the day, the person turns to them and says, well, here's $5, get the hell out of here, and you can't do anything to me anyway because you're illegal. Believe it or not, that really happens. And so that can't, you know, that is prevented, the abuse of people in that way, or the abuse of people in some ways where these people may be taken into dangerous situations and forced to work in under terrible circumstances that other people wouldn't work, that they can't do anything about. Well, now they'll be protected by those that are taking on the responsibility of making sure that there's no abuse in that respect. At the same time, it's for the right or good things to be taking place between the exchanges between people. And this is a really wonderful, we'll say, outcome along the fourth way. Now, along the fifth way, we have a totally different problem, which is that it's the, we'll say, the untruthfulness of law and the lack of laws that help, as well as a predominant, we'll say, bias about law in one way or another, depending upon where you're from, that the people who are legal aliens can get involved in. How can they do that? Are they going to become lawyers? Well, maybe. That's one possibility. That's not my suggestion as an answer. The answer might be is that they work with lawyers by being a connection. They start a business. They start become a partner or a part of a business or a part of a group of businesses that helps to make sure that the laws are consistently applied by both law enforcement and by employers and of abusing people or not seeing them as human beings. And so these situations now are, it's sort of like the fourth way in some ways, but it's much more based upon the structure of law and not so much on a spiritual factor, although spirit is always there when there's truth. What would their businesses or jobs be? They would be somewhat maybe like assistants, legal assistants, or they would be possibly as high as a paralegal kind of assistant. They would also be people who only learn the rudimentaries of what law is, but make sure that when they communicate with people, probably originally in their own languages, they do so to make sure that those people understand what their rights are. And they go to the people who may be either not understanding or abusing the rights of these people, and they try to find a reasonable solution that may employ litigation, but in most cases reaches settlement where everybody wins. And that may require even the use of, virtually a special kind of court system that is designed for this kind of thing, based more on equity than on law. I'm very strong on courts being equitable. We used to have courts of equity and get away with them. This may be a way to get back to courts of equity. And it's a good thing. So we have to maybe consider that we're going to have a few courts around that look for the equity of how illegal aliens are treated in all the different ways I'm describing, and make sure that the laws are not being abused or misapplied so that people can't have freedom and can't have a life. And they have some path to eventually becoming a citizen if they're willing to take that path, although it may be difficult for them. Time is passing us by. I've got to get on to the next subject. These subjects I am not taking the time to fully develop because we just don't have the time. Okay, so along the sixth way, this is a kind of, we'll call it the devotional way. This is the area where we may have to find people that are illegal aliens and want to serve along the fifth and sixth way will be either a member of some religion or follow some spiritual principles that they want to practice. It'll be more about their serving ways others for 4 years that helps others to find in some ways a more spiritual life, a more religiously founded life. It's for some people who want religion and for others who just want some sense of God. And yes, I'm suggesting that these people can become legal aliens, eventually citizens, by practicing service to others through devotion to God and through helping others who have that inclination to, in some way, do so as well. Now, some people say, well, that's against the rules because government can't promote any particular religion. It's not. The only thing it's promoting is that God exists. And you can say, well, isn't that a religion? No. Isn't it a violation of the First Amendment? No. Have you ever looked at a dollar bill? Have you ever read the Declaration of Independence? Yeah. That's what it means to be an American. Now, I know some people who are atheists would probably balk at this and say, well, that's just not fair. We don't believe that God exists. We don't believe God is anything. So why should people be allowed to become citizens if they do and they promote it and help others to do that? Well, because it's the foundation of the creation of the United States and some other countries. That's why. Just because you happen to be an atheist doesn't say that the United States is not founded on the principle that all rights come from our Creator. And if you don't believe that, that's okay. The only problem you're going to have is that you're not accepting the principles that the United States is founded on, and you may at times dislike that. Maybe you should go to another country. There's some countries that don't have that concern. So you might want to think about that, but that if you can stay here, there's no problem. There's no rule you have to buy into it, except you can't interfere with those who do, because it's the first founding principle of the United States. Right? Inalienable, or unalienable rights given to us by our Creator. That's what it says. Now, those who practice this under the sixth rate are doing so with, we'll call it, a specific viewpoint, which they can espouse without having to be regulated or changed from it. Could somebody claim they're an atheist and do it? That's a touchy subject, maybe. We'd have to think about that one. I got to move on to the seventh ray real quickly. Okay, I covered the seventh ray and a lot of the other ones, so I don't have to go very far on this. The main thing is that anybody that creates any kind of business, even while they're doing any of the other things, gets extra credit for that. And if they create a business itself, it's still, like I said, in a third ray. But if they do so along with any of the other things, they shorten the time in which they get to become a legal alien and a citizen, and they're full. Remember, they're technically legal as soon as they start doing the process, but if they don't finish it, they're not fully legal, and then they can lose that option. And in addition, once it's finished, once they're done, they are permanently able to live in the United States. If they want full citizenship, which is the right to vote and several other important rights, then they need to complete the citizen test and all the other things that are presently required to become a citizen. There's many other subjects that can be carried out with this. All of these are needed to be done with also enforcing so the rights of all, the collective, all, against those that are continually coming into the country, so we need to have stronger borders. Yes, we do. And it's silly that we don't. But we have to stop this sometime. That doesn't mean we're still not going to, from time to time, have problems where some people come in, and now we have a system that will help those people to find their way to being good citizens and part of the American or whatever country you're in, if you want to use the same system, way of life. I hope this has made some sense to you. It's a big subject, and unfortunately not enough time to really talk about it. And for those of you who want to communicate with me or talk to me more about this, do so. You can get me at nilesofwhylifeis.com, and hey, other ways too, I'm always available. I'll talk to you on the phone. Okay, listen, we're out of time for right now. And I hope this show has made some sense to you. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.